Hi, and welcome to the MCB Community Update. My name's Eric Joseph. I'm the Executive Director of the Audible Local Ledger, located in beautiful Mashpee, Massachusetts. It's part of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network, Maine, your main source for accessible community news and information. We bring local news and information to the blind and print disabled across the state. As part of this podcast, we'll interview the Commissioner John Oliveira of the Mass Commission for the Blind quarterly. And in the intervening months, we'll bring experts who have a lot to offer to our community. And we'll listen to what they have to say, we'll ask them some probing questions, and hopefully we'll all learn together. We welcome your feedback and hope you enjoy our series of interviews. And now, without further ado, here is the MCB Community Update. Hello, MCB consumers. Today for our April webinar and podcast, we're speaking with Director of Assistive Technology for the Mass Commission for the Blind, Alexander Pooler. This is of particular interest to me as someone who runs a reading service for people who are blind, which relies to some degree on assistive technology. So I'm excited to hear what Alexander is going to bring for information to us today. But first, let's figure out a little bit about Alexander. What brought you to the MCB? Hello. What's your background? Why don't you tell us a little bit about your career path and how you ended up in this position that you're in now? How you got there?
Absolutely, Eric. And thank you very much for having me on. So, when you think about how we've lived the last 5 years with everything with COVID and the impacts, it's hard to imagine that there was another time where it seemed like there were other kind of calamities that we were dealing with as a nation and in public in general that seemed like was much more impactful at that time. And for me, 2008, 2009, I was graduating from the University of Tennessee with hopes and dreams of getting into urban or regional planning or working for the government. And as I was finishing up my last classes in the fall of 2008, I'm watching what is going on in the national scene with the economy, with the housing crisis, with the banking crisis. And I graduated December of 2008. My wife had taken a job in Boston. I moved up here with a job in mind that I was going to have. And by the time I arrived, that job had disappeared along with thousands of other jobs. So going into 2009, lots of uncertainty, not really sure what I was going to do, where I was going to go. Had worked in the private sector for most of my life at that time. So I was going to college. It was kind of while working full-time as well. And the summer of that year, I saw a job posting for the Mass Commission for the Blind for a position. And at the time, to be honest, I was quite desperate just to have a position of any type just to get started. And had the interview with now Commissioner John Oliveira. He was Director of Assistive Technology at the time. A few other individuals started in September of 2009. And at the time, I really kind of felt that this would probably just be a temporary position. The job initially was funded with federal stimulus money, so there was a possibility that the funding may not even be there long term, but at least it was a start. And early on, I started to really learn a lot more about the position. Found that some of the other skills, especially when it came to computer programming that I'd taken for GIS classes when I was wanting to be an Aboriginal planner, really applied over for JAWS scripting. Learned what JAWS was, learned a lot more about what the commission did and how to work with people with different disabilities and abilities. But really the turning point came with one of my very first consumers that I worked with. It was a World War II widower. Wife had recently just passed away. And he had been much in denial for a long period of time about the condition of his eyesight and was in definite need of a video magnification device, a desktop CCTV. Had one in my possession, went to his home, visited with him. He was very resistant to the technology, very resistant to me being there. He was not interested in any of this, but I'm trying to find a way to make a connection personal-wise from the technology to how he lives his daily life. When I walked into the front door of his house, I realized he had some photographs up on the wall of younger children. I assumed that those were probably his grandchildren, maybe even great-grandchildren. Took a couple of them down, put them underneath the CCTV and enlarged them so we can see them. And you can immediately see that the connection was made. He could tell me stories about every photograph that was on the wall, but I can immediately tell that he had not been able to see the details of the people in those photographs. And at that moment, this was no longer a job. This was something that I became passionate about. I saw that I can make a real time, real difference in the lives of individuals. And that's kind of normally when I tell this story, that's where I say that's where it begins. And this is where I am at right now. But as a quick update, recently on the South Shore Cape and Islands, our MCB Region 5, Margaret Gaffney, one of our longtime beloved employees in Central Technology Unit, has decided to retire. And while we are working to locate a replacement for that position, I started taking on some caseloads down in that region. And last week, I met with a very fine individual working with them on a newer desktop CCTVs. Let me tell you, they're a lot less in weight they are today in 2024 than they were back in 2009. And I'm working with her on this device. And as we're talking about this, I'm talking about this in terms of what it can help for reading. And at the very last minute, kind of as an afterthought, I mentioned, you can also use this to enlarge photographs and images and things you want to see. And her face lit up and she shot out of the chair, ran over to where she had a table of photographs, brought over a photograph, put it underneath it, photograph of her son, who she tells me is in hospice. And you can see the emotion in her face. And so when I think about that as a bookend, you know, this is the impact that our technology has on the lives of the people that we serve and really the driving force of our mission. So that's what kind of brought me into this position and into this realm. And this is what's keeping me here, is that ability to make that real-time impact that is not just, it's not just a number we're looking at it or something that you can quantify in a data sheet. It's those individual reactions and those moments that you realize I am restoring some independence to the individual through leveraging technology, in this case, assistive technology.
Wow, it's really easy to understand your arc, your career arc, when you put it that way. I understand how you went from 2008, which I remember very well as a very tough time business-wise for everybody involved. I had started a company that failed quickly afterwards because of it, and many other people have gone through that. And the bookend of the Cape Cod, which is, of course, my region, that's what my reading service represents, is Bristol and Barnstable County. And with Barnstable County being the third oldest county in the country, mainly because of no young people, not as much as the number of seniors, but because of the lack of young people on the Cape. It is a target-rich environment for macular degeneration, for RP, for many different eye problems that will arise later in life. In fact, when we look at the MCB map, southeastern Massachusetts is almost solid red. That is where so much of this of your services are required. So now that we know a little bit of how you got there, maybe we can understand a little bit more about what are the services that you offer, because assistive technology sounds like a massively wide category of service that would be offered to the disabled. So first, what is it? And then maybe you could tell us, how does the process of actually getting some of that technology work? Is it lengthy? Is it quick? How does it tie in with the designation of being officially declared blind when it's sent from the doctor to the state?
So something you may hear us talk about, those of us who work with assistive technology, we use two terms rather interchangeable, assistive technology or AT, and that's just assistive technology shortened. But essentially, it's a blanket term for assistive, adaptive, rehabilitation technology and devices. In the case of MCB, it's devices that are designed to increase either at-home or community independence for our consumers. But it's not limited to just individuals with visual impairments. It's really a blanket term for any different ability, disability, however you want to approach that, any sort of impedance to a lifestyle that maybe you would otherwise be able to enjoy and take advantage of without having to overcome whatever the impairment may be. So it's a very large, very definitely a blanket term. And it covers a wide range of devices. It covers devices that are designed specifically with trying to address a particular impairment in mind. Handheld digital video magnifiers are one of those devices that's in mind for those who are low vision. OCR devices for those who are having difficulty being able to read at any magnification level or suffer from severe eye fatigue. This is a device that will read printed material to you in a digital voice. Braille embossers, Braille output devices, a lot of different types of technology are like that. But a technology that's also kind of falls in that category as well is because it has the ability to be adapted. And I'm going to put up to the camera here. This is my iPhone. And on my iPhone is settings that are built into the device that make this more adaptive and have some assistive technology qualities built into it. So it's not just the technologies that are dedicated specifically for addressing an impairment. It can be technologies that can be augmented or can be utilized differently to basically turn them into an assistive technology device for a lot of our consumers. And the devices really can be very simple, handheld video magnifiers. I'll use that term quite often, probably during our talk here today, is a very simple device. It's got a camera. It's got a monitor that faces back to you. You have the ability to change magnifications. Most of them have the ability to change different color options, whether it's an enhanced positive, enhanced negative, maybe some different colors. Very, very simple device. But we also have some very exotic solutions for some of our consumers, depending on what their situations are. You know, we work with everybody from somebody who may be working as a stocking shelves at your local grocery store to those who work in the defense industry. And really, depending on what their jobs are and what they're facing as a daily obstacle, the technology can be very simple. It can be very exotic. And a lot of times, this can be dependent on the skill set of the consumer. How do you get a hold of some of this technology? So if you're registered with Mass Commission for the Blind, first and foremost, our services are free. We are your taxpayer dollars at work for you. Sometimes when I talk to consumers, they'll tell me that we feel guilty about asking help from you because they're looking for you to help. Please do not feel that way. Again, these are your taxpayer dollars at work for you. And this is one of those benefits of living in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. I can absolutely testify that a lot of our neighboring states and throughout most of the country, the level of services that we are able to offer, especially to our senior population here in Massachusetts, is second to none and far exceeds many of our peer states here in New England. This is a benefit and a resource. Please absolutely take advantage of it if something you need to do so. But what the kind of how do you get with our services is you will have a conversation with your case manager. Typically, you will identify what obstacles or what areas of need that you have that technology may be appropriate. Referral sent over to the Assistive Technology Department, and we typically will deploy one of our six regionally based assistive technology specialists. Now, as I mentioned a little while ago, our specialist for South Shore, Cape, and Islands, Mara Gaffney, has recently retired. We are in the process of posting that position right now. But we have individuals from Western Mass, Central Mass, North Shore, up to the New Hampshire border, the Metro Rest 128 communities, and the core of Boston. We also have dedicated VR trainers inside of the commission itself that we're able to deploy as well. And we also do leverage and work in cohort with a lot of our case managers and our rehab teachers. Some of the technology that we have is very much in our domain because it's very, very complicated. But some of the technology is very, very simple and quite easy to use. So we do have a team approach to this to try to get the technology out there to do the assessments and figure out really where you are and what we can do. I will also say, though, that the technology that we're trying to deploy is really going to fit your individual skill set and where you are. There's no point in deploying something that may solve a problem, but if we're not able to work with you so you can comfortably use that technology, it's going to cause more stress in your life than it's really worth. And we're going to find some other technologies that are out there. So the technology really is not just to identify and address the obstacle that maybe you're facing, but also fit your skill set and where you are so you can comfortably and confidently use that technology.
And do you find, Alexander, that the, let's say the senior population may be a little more reticent to interact with technology, given that they may be a little more phobic about having to use new things and saying, oh, that's for the kids, or my nephew always handles that, those kind of things. We come into that a lot when we're trying to help people by giving them Echo Dots which are smart speakers which can pick up our signal and give them a great, they're life-changing pieces of technology. They really are. Of all the testimonials I've received, probably 70% of them are people I gave a smart speaker to who said, I had no idea that I could make phone calls, that it would give me medical prompts, that it would tell me what the weather was, that I could listen to news, that I could listen to music, that I, it opened up my world. Those kind of pieces I find are tricky because they'll say, well, I don't know much about computers and I don't know how to handle it. And do I have Wi-Fi? I don't even know if I have it, which again, many people on a lower budget don't have a lot of internet access except through the phone, which, by the way, you would find those settings that Alexander's talking about, I believe, in the accessibility portion of your settings on the iPhone. If you haven't played with those, you should, because they're going to really open up a lot of information for you. It's terrific stuff. So I do think that when we're the analysis, I guess, of the caseworker probably has to look at a lot of different layers of who that person is to come up with their individualized plan, because it's going to include orientation and mobility, maybe. It's going to include technology. It's going to be registration. There may be some groups that are going to be wanting to incorporate her or him into their group. There's an awful lot going on. And I just personally have run into many problems with people saying, well, just give me the radio. It's simple. I turn it on. I can hear you. But the problem with a radio is it's a transistor radio, and radio has white noise all through it and bounces around. And where you are matters a lot. Whereas with a smart speaker and some of the technology you're talking about, you can do it in your home. As long as you're there, it's going to work. And you can't always say that about some of our radio stuff that we do. So I almost exclusively now give out Echo Dots wherever possible. And there's a new Echo Pop, which I think you probably know about, which is comes with a battery base, and you can take it with you wherever you go. Now, as long as you have a hotspot on your phone or you have Wi-Fi, you can use it at the beach, you can use it outside, you can use it everywhere. So it's a nice advancement for smart speakers, which used to be kind of anchored into the living room or kitchen or whatever. So the biggest resistance for my group when we look at this, and by the way, all of those regions that you talked about have reading services that service those regions with specific local information and readings of newspaper and information that's relevant to them. So wherever Alexander has said there is a region that has the helpers, the servers, the service team that's going to go out and do the training and do the analysis, we also have radio reading services as well. And we always do run into the senior bias, as it is, against technology. How do you overcome that? And you showed me with that great example of the veteran and the picture, how that brought to life something that had been scabbed over or had been just dormant for so long, and that it lit them up and it lit you up as well. How do you train your caseworkers or your technology people to overcome that fear of technology? Because it's real. I mean, we run into it all the time. I'm sure you run into it a lot more even than we do.
So that's a great question. And I have to offer thanks before I kind of explained kind of a response and answer to that to my parents. My parents have been unknowingly been guinea pigs for many years for me for trying some of these things with them. Because when you think about some of the resistance to technology, that's not because of a visual impairment. That's just really about where you find yourself at any given day, time, and in our age. When I go to visit my parents live in North Carolina. And one of the things that drives me nuts every single time is when I go home, their VCR is always blinking 12 o'clock. Now, I don't know what drives me more nuts about that. The fact that the VCR, obviously, every time they lose power when a hurricane goes through, resets at 12 o'clock. Or the fact that I know, as their loving son, bought them a DVD Blu-ray player a number of years ago so I can move all of their movies over to Blu-ray with a much better resolution on their television set, and the fact that they're still watching VHS tapes on their widescreen TV. So when I went home during COVID, it took some time, went back to North Carolina. And at that time, that MCB was also looking at deploying more smart speaker technology to our consumers. And in fact, I was in the middle of working on a study to really kind of see, you know, what's the best way to approach about doing this. And to kind of answer that question about, you know, we run into this phobia about technology from a lot of our consumers, and what's the best way to overcome that? And what I found was, and this was started with my parents, and I was able to apply this working with my consumers, is you got to find that one thing that makes that technology relevant in their life. And once you're able to find that one thing that opens up the conversation to ask a question about, well, what else can we do? And then what else can we do? And it gets bigger, bigger, and bigger. And you start addressing the phobia about technology when you show somebody about how many doors that you thought were closed permanently, you can now reopen. And for my parents, my father was a DJ for AFRTS in Vietnam during the Vietnam War, and had this massive collection of old reel-to-reels. And my fear has always been is eventually they're going to rot out. They're not going to be useful. That machine he runs it on, I have no clue how old it is. It's eventually going to expire. And it's just, I see the labor he goes through when he wants to listen to the music he wants to listen to. So I just, one day, I've been trying to explain to them about the use of Echo dots. They didn't really want to hear about it. They were comfortable with what they had. I went in and installed one in the kitchen and asked them, I was like, hey, why don't we play some music? And my dad's like, yeah, sure. And he goes, go over to the cabinet. And I immediately asked for, and I got to be careful how much I allowed to say this. I had these devices in my house and I got to make sure they're not listening. asked him to go ahead and play 60s music. And he immediately started playing it. And what is this? And I had it hooked up to my own account. So I had the access to all the albums as well. And I was like, well, I can do this and I can do that and I can do this. And for the rest of my trip, my dad would just constantly talk to this thing to find out what else can he do. And what I was able to accomplish, while the VCR is probably still blinking 12 o'clock right now, if I went home, I was able to find a technology that restored some level of independence to their life, added some joy. Remember earlier, I made a comment about that sometimes we can't really quantify our success in terms of data and numbers and something you put on a spreadsheet. It's the individual reaction. It's the story. It's the sense and feeling of I've had some independence returned to me. I opened up so much for them by simply showing them that you can ask it to play music from a certain time period. And so taking that now and applying that to a lot of the seniors that we work with, I do the exact same thing when I deploy an Echo Dot with those, and I ask them to play 40s music or 50s music, something that you can't find really well on the radio anymore, but it takes them back to that time period and it gives them a little bit of joy, a little bit of happiness at that time. And my hope is that is the entryway to start that conversation, to have a larger conversation about what other technologies are out there and available that we can potentially leverage.
That's a great answer, and it's really insightful. I'm absolutely going to employ that. The times that I did that unintentionally is when I've said, don't you want to hear Tony Bennett? And then play Tony Bennett for them, and they're like, wait a minute, same thing that you're talking about. I just used it as, see, it can do this, and it can also give them a medical prompt at 9 a.m., and it can do that. So that is very, very useful information that we will.
You know, it's not even just even with music. I've had consumers who have talked to me that, and I think this is wanting them to feel more connected. I had one that I set up a routine so it would give the traffic report from their home into downtown Boston, because they were so used to always making that commute that it was still important for them to hear and feel like they were connected into that world and into that environment, and then immediately dump into WBZ News Radio and just not having to fumble with a radio. And as you pointed earlier with transistor radios, you know, all the other things that come along with that, just having a device that you can simply issue a very small and prompt command to the device, and whatever it is you want to set up for that, you know, again, for this consumer, they wanted to know the traffic. You can do, you know, sports scores, you can do the weather, you can do everything you can possibly think of with the device. And, you know, and people don't realize that, you know, at the end of the day, those smart speakers, all they are really is a speaker. There's not much to those devices. As long as you're able to get them online, it can really open up a world for you.
Yeah, they're Absolutely terrific. And speaking of them, in that particular piece of technology, could you maybe take us through, and this can be very brief, but kind of a history of assistive technology for people who are blind or print disabled specifically? Is there a begin with, did it begin with Braille? Was it just a magnifying glass? All the way up to smart speakers. I believe there's something that can clip on that is a laser that can tell you if things are at head level for head strikes, things like that. It's a little raw in terms of giving you a lot of feedback that's wrong, but things like that are developing. Can you kind of tell us what's new on the horizon for our consumers, and where did we come from? How far have we come in the time you've been there, even forgetting the history of going back to, 100 years or however many far back we have to go for magnifying lenses, et cetera. Within your life, what are some of the things that we have seen develop and are getting refined, which will be increasingly helpful in the future? Because I feel there's a lot of development going around technology that is exciting, very exciting, and going to be a very helpful service for people. And I'd like to kind of hang that out there, that in addition to the help that you have now, services that are terrific, especially here in Massachusetts, that there's more coming and that there's a lot of hope for increased accessibility to the world. And with that is the development of AT. So if you could just give us a quick snapshot as we kind of round out this meeting, because that will give us an idea of what's out there. What can people do? And you mentioned a routine. How does that get set up on a Echo Dot or on a smart speaker? And that person who's training them probably has to talk them through that a little bit and make sure that they remember their commands and their skills and their different setups. So it's kind of a complicated piece that has come to this end that is really simple after all this development for the last however many years as technology has developed. And I'd love to hear just a quick timeline of some of the things that have come along, and not using acronyms, because many of us won't know what OCR is or what JAWS might be or what AT, until you explained it, might be. This would be really helpful. And I think it's kind of a broad, we're going a mile long and an inch deep on a lot of this stuff. But it's important because I think a lot of people don't know much about it. And it's great to know the tools that are out there to help you deal with some of the things that life can give you.
So a lot of what we've seen here recently with technology has been a lot more on the enhancement side and improvements over existing technology. There are a couple of ones I'll mention at the very end are definitely newer. So, magnification, absolutely from the dawn of time of just getting a piece of glass or just getting water in and being able to shape it a little different that you can increase magnification. All the way up through Braille. When I started with the agency, and this is probably the biggest leap that I've seen. The majority of the video magnifiers that we deploy to our consumers, two boxes weighed about 45 to 50 pounds combined. We put monitor on top of the base. Let me tell you how fun those are to deploy to triple deckers and very large devices. We were still deploying a lot of older redeploying of the Aladdin video magnifiers. These are magnifiers that had almost nothing digital inside of it. It was literally magnifying glass, a couple of levers inside the machine, a couple of bands. I'm definitely oversimplifying how the device was designed and developed and works. But we had very simple devices to deploy, and we started seeing the very first of the flat panels coming out. And the flat panels at the time were LCDs. They weren't particularly bright. The sharpness of it was could be questionable from time to time. That's where we were when I started the agency in 2009. Today, I have 4K output, and 4K really is just saying that is the top level of sharpness and clarity and colors and vividness. I can't use enough adjectives to describe this of an output device for a monitor. high definition cameras, able to do distance viewing, and where there's a device in the back of it that can flip out and look at something from a distance if necessary. Lightweight, foldable, transportable. Transportable is such a huge game changer, especially for our consumers. And this is something that would be of interest of the people you serve in your area there, Eric. For those who are take trips to Florida in the wintertime, the ability to collapse a CCTV, and within reason, not everyone's going to be able to do it, but within reason, then transport it from home to wherever your foundation name may be, this is something that we never had access to. And it's still the same technology. It's still a camera, a computer chip, magnifies, redistributes the image on a screen. Same general technology, but the enhancements have been to make it smaller, make it lighter, make it have more options. The biggest thing is make it transportable. That's where we've seen for some of those devices. For handheld video magnifiers, I have seen some new cameras come out for those and new monitors. Honestly, those really haven't done a lot of change over the years. But Eric, as you mentioned about some of the accessibility features that are in the iPhone, this is maybe a spoiler alert or a tease to talk to somebody from assistive technology. Your iPhone, holding up my iPhone here again, has the ability to turn into a handheld video magnifier. Now, it is not my favorite quality. I wish they work a little bit more on the stabilization side of it, but it has that ability. And I think that is where we're going to on handheld video magnifiers. And in my opinion, maybe one of the reasons why we don't see a lot of new enhancements with that is eventually this is a technology that's going to get replaced by something that you already own right now for most of our people we work with, or you can't obtain, which is a smartphone device with a decent enough camera. In terms of really where the newer technologies are really come across, OCR stands for optical character recognition. It's a fancy way of saying it's a computer that takes a photograph of printed material and then reads that printed material to you. When this technology first came out, I'd say it had about a 90% accuracy rate. And for the most time, you would hear 90% and go, wow, that sounds amazing. Until you consider 90% over 10,000 words of how many words you're misspelling or mispronouncing. It can be maddening, but in terms of when it first came out, it was a game changer because I can go into potential employers who are questioning about hiring somebody with a visual impairment, and they would ask me the question, what do we do about the printed material? I can show them that device as if we can solve that problem, imagine what else that we can do for you. The JAWS software. JAWS is software that allows a computer desktop screen to be fully readable for a person with a visual impairment with little to no usable eyesight. You are essentially able to use hotkey commands. This is a combination of different keystrokes to be able to navigate the desktop of your computer system and read everything back to you. Technology really hasn't changed that much when I first started, but it's definitely gotten better with more features every single year. The new two biggest ones that we're starting to get into, and I just recently returned from a conference that California State University Northridge hosted this past March on assistive technology. The two biggest things that are out there was AI and wearables. So wearables is technology that you can wear that gives you an additional tool to utilize to navigate your environment. It could be everything from something that's haptic feedback that says, hey, I'm walking from point A to point B. In my phone, I drop in the directions, and through haptic feedback, it tells me if I'm on the right path. It could be something as simple as sonar that you can attach to the end of a cane or other devices on you to give you some idea of the proximity of you to obstacles that you may be running into that are in your environment. It could be that I take a photograph, and if I have no usable eyesight, take a photograph of a situation and have the phone read back to me on the AI side of things, what's in the photograph? Maybe it's telling me that, you know, I'm in a conference room, or it's telling me that I'm in the woods, or it's telling me that there is a huge tree right in front of me and maybe I shouldn't walk any further. It's utilizing these different types of technologies for our consumers. And most of these technologies really had non-visual impairment applications in mind when developed. Most of this technology had something else in mind, and maybe they didn't get much traction for it at that time. and they decided to see if this is something that would work for our community, or is technology that that they did have a lot of this that are in mind. The one that has me most fascinated right now of all the technology, AI has a lot of positives, but it's not ready for prime time. Those are my words. It can do a lot of things for you, but a lot of it needs to be tested. The wearables, same thing. I've tried out certain devices that were supposed to help me navigate, say, from our office at 600 Washington Street to the steakhouse, and occasionally likes to put me in the middle of Washington Street itself. Not good if you have a visual impairment. So we had that feedback with the manufacturer, so they continue to improve it. There's a lot of different things that are out there that we're looking to try to really leverage. But what I saw that was fascinating was Sony had a display of their mainstream technologies. And one that I'm both fascinated and I will admit a little afraid of at the same time is they had their robotic dog there. And when I'm looking at that and was talking with them about the potential applications to partner up with someone that does AI, someone who does navigation, somebody that does a lot of these other devices, and essentially make that a companion for someone with a visual impairment that is able to interpret the environment and communicate that with the consumer, that's amazing. That's fascinating. That can be an absolute game changer. But there's a part of me that I've watched too many science fiction movies over the years. I get a little concerned about that. But it's something where that's where we're going. That's the next frontier. And I don't know how long it's going to take for us to get there. Some of these technologies, they come out new, they improve it immediately, and it's ready to go. Other technologies, I'll use Google Glass as an example of something that came out a number of years ago. It was hot for a moment, and then it literally disappeared. It's really kind of hard to get a feel for this, but I am starting to get to a point that I can see maybe not one company with one technology, but if that company talks to two other companies that I know that have other technologies and you put it all in the same device, wow, it could be incredibly transformative for our consumers.
Much like iPhones with navigation, where they started to partner with other partners to be able to give you the ability to do trips on your phone and navigate wherever you're going. They had to partner outside. Nokia didn't develop that. They went outside and bought people to bring them in to do that for them and partner with other companies. And that kind of development led to being able to never be lost in general if you're driving a car. So you named a whole bunch of different new, very exciting technologies and some of the standard ones, which are still exciting, and some of the older ones. How can a person say, I want that one? Or is it the caseworker who evaluates them who says, you know, what you really need is a combination of two or three of these things because you have a need for a screen reader, but you also have a need for being able to, almost anyone can use a smart speaker. Well, I just want the smart speaker, or I just want JAWS, or I want training on JAWS, even though I have more vision than maybe than someone who doesn't. How is that all decided by the caseworker, or how much does the consumer have a say in what they will be assigned as a piece of technology?
It's a great question. And really, it's a team approach between the case manager, the AT specialist, and the consumer. Ideally, we want to get everyone on the same page, looking at the same direction. And in the scenario that you gave, is somebody who, let's say they have a progressive eye condition, and they say, you know what, while I still have usable sight, I want to learn JAWS. I can't tell you how often I wish I was hearing that from our consumers, rather than the opposite, where they hold on to one skill set, then it's very difficult to teach the second. What we try to do is, and this is something I talk a lot with our case managers and our AT specialists a lot, is we want to address the need, maybe sometimes more than the want. And sometimes consumers maybe see something that, an example I'll give is Dr. Phil occasionally has a particular company on called Orcam for a wearable distance viewing device. And I can tell when that device is on a show because there's a spike in request for that device by name. And I know exactly where it came from. I'll go and look at the archives. And sure enough, Dr. Phil had it on last week. We want to be able to provide the best possible technology, but we also got to remind consumers a lot of times that, you know, you got to take what you're hearing and you're seeing with a grain of salt. Just because you hear and see something that says that it's going to be this magical elixir to solve your problems, it may not be that way. Unfortunately, we have some people in our industry who will overpromise and underdeliver on some of these ideas. The majority of them do not. And I will say, here in Massachusetts, we have a great network of for-profit companies that we do business with that I do fully understand that, you know, it's a limited engagement with some of our consumers that, you know, you want to make sure that you're giving them the best possible information. So it's really an overall assessment. We want to find out what kind of tasks you're able to do. You know, if you come back and you say, you know, Alexander, I want to go to college and I would like to take some classes and I need to have a computer. Like, okay, great. I understand that need for that. Let's have that conversation and talk about that. Well, I want a MacBook Pro. You need to explain to me why you want a MacBook Pro, because that may not necessarily be the best tool for you. The commercial may say otherwise. Your grandson may say otherwise. Someone out, your neighbor may say otherwise. But we really want to have the right technology for the right person. Because I mentioned earlier on, you know, if we deploy a technology to you that you're not able to comfortably use, then the likelihood of you really using that technology to its fullest potential really goes down. So we want to make sure it's the right technology for the right person. If you have input you're going to offer to us, please absolutely do that. It gives maybe a bit of a starting point. But sometimes when we're not doing exactly what is being asked from us, it's not because we are trying to deny somebody a particular technology. It's because based on our experience and based on where we are, we're looking at what your available skills are, what tasks you're trying to accomplish, what resources we have, and find the best possible marriage of all three of those for the individual so they can have that increased home and community independence.
Great answer. There's a lot there, and I'm sure an awful lot goes into that evaluation and a great deal of respect for the people who have to make it. So we started with a little bit about you. We now know an awful lot about the career part, but we'll close with some more personal stuff just to get to know the people behind Mass Commission for the Blind. So who's your favorite musical artist or group, and what was your first and then your favorite concert?
So this is going to sound a little weird coming from me, because it'll give the impression that I am much older than what I am. My favorite artist, gentleman named Meatloaf. I have some very vivid memories as a child of parties my parents used to throw. My father was in the military, we're in the army, and we moved around quite a bit. And there were a number of parties where Meatloaf was in heavy rotation. And I just developed that nostalgia association with his very first album. And I constantly keep thinking about that, and it takes me back to a time. And it's one of those things that as I grew up and my friends were into, you know, the latest, you know, whether it's Nirvana, Pearl Jam, Ice Cube, Dr. Dre, you know, and that's all music I like as well. But when it came down to like, okay, if I have control of, you know, what's going to go into tape deck, dating myself there a little bit. I absolutely love Meatloaf. First concert that I went to was Doobie Brothers. Doobie Brothers did a concert in Raleigh, North Carolina. I had won tickets, so didn't really know what to expect, but love classic rock, love that genre, absolutely enjoy that, had a lot of fun. And my favorite concert was actually last year. This is up at Capital Center for the Arts in Concord, New Hampshire. Had the remnants of, back to my favorite individual band group, Meatloaf, remnants of his old band. And it was a recent American Idol winner who, if you didn't know the difference, he looked almost spot on for a young Meatloaf, and did Bat Out of the Hell album from end to end. And it was just a great show. I had a lot of fun. You know, I normally don't do cover bands very much, but this was done well enough that I had an amazing time. And yeah, that's of all the concerts I've been to, and been to Madonna, I've been to Aerosmith, I'm going to Metallica this upcoming year. I feel like before I get any much older, I need to experience a little bit of the hard rock side of things. But really, just that cover band and somebody acting like, sounding like, looking like Meatloaf, that was amazing.
And we're rounding third and coming for home.
Yes.
Thanks so much for your insights and expertise today, Alexander. We learned a lot. Consumers, join us for our next MCB Community Update. It'll be on May 31st, when we'll host our quarterly interview and update with MCB Commissioner John Oliveira. Until then, bye for now.